Blog Talk Radio.
By Neely Fuller Jr., published in 1969. We're still in the introduction of this text, and we're on page 41 of the text in the introduction. And tonight we'll cover only two sections of this introduction, starting with show-off-isms, and we'll finish with basic methods of resisting racism. Tonight, my name is Charles, and my lovely wife, Jalavet, is on the wheel of steel. Say hello, Jalavet.
Hello, Jalavet.
All right.
Hey, Brother Mean is also on the line.
What's up?
Hey, what's up, Brother Mean? You in the house?
In the house.
There you go. Well, all right. I know this first topic is one of your favorites. And I love to hear you give our group and our wider audience a discourse on the importance, the relevance of show-offism or flossing as it relates to contributing to the our mental damage in this white supremacy paradigm. Okay, Mr. Fuller starts off in the section on this page 41 again in my text. Four basic show-off isms among the victims of racism. Number one, showing off to each other the things that white people have allowed them to obtain. Number two, showing off to each other the information that white people have allowed them to obtain. Number three, showing off to each other their ability to belittle each other. Number four, showing off to each other their ability to make sexual impressions on each other. His explanation follows. Many non-white people spend much time, energy, money showing off to each other. They do this as a means of trying to make the overall effects of racism on their personal affairs seem unimportant and or non-existent. This show-offism serves no constructive purpose. It only helps non-white people to become more pitiful, primitive, stupid, and or silly in comparison to the activities of white supremacists and or in comparison to white people in general. Now I give my brief commentary that I'll just start with number one, showing off to each other the things that white people have allowed them to obtain. You know, we know all have experienced members of our community who, you know, whenever they buy something new or they desire to buy something new only to flaunt it in the face of their neighbor, their fellow victim of white supremacy, and they all seek to flaunt what they perceive the other person doesn't have, or if they all can get it, they all band together and try to show off in front of those who they perceive as less fortunate to obtain these trinkets of white supremacy, in order to, you know, make those members of our community feel of less worth. And that in itself is a psychosis, because they should be helping to improve the condition of the overall community, as we've all been victimized by this system. And number two, you know, the information that white people have allowed them to obtain. I mean, we all know people, some of us have even belonged to that kind of social network where people, you know, like to hold into high regard, let's say, secret information, whether it be a fraternity or elite business organization, and they keep that information that has been delivered to them or granted them by their overlords, and they hold it as a proprietary information, not for the benefit of the greater black community or non-white community. And I'll look at number three, showing off to each other their ability to belittle one another. You know, I would say they playing a dozen. You know, we think that's a black cultural social activity, but it's actually one of the worst activities that we teach our children to engage. Just making a sport of putting one another down and insulting our family. And we consider that a positive social activity, but it was something that we should stop and learn to value ourselves and not, you know, make fun of each other's mothers and grandmothers and fathers and try to build one another up instead of putting each other down. Number four, showing off to each other their ability to make sexual impressions on each other. And I would look at that as we see our sexual power as a means of attacking one another by breaking one another's marriages or even using our sexuality to victimize other members of the community who may be less or more impressionable, rather. Does anybody else have any comments on this section that they'd like to share?
Yep. Sounds long. That's what I believe. That's the single most problem. That's the single biggest problem we have in our community that holds us back, is that whole idea of flossing. We use it to we're taking the resources and the knowledge that we have to show off in front of other people in order to use it to our benefit to make us free. That's one thing that holds us back. It's one thing that's encouraged by the system, is for us to do that. There's no one stopping us from doing that. There's no one stopping us from running our mouth, talking about what we know. Matter of fact, they invite it. You know, that's our folks. You know, nobody's going to do nothing to me because I know this. What do you know? Well, I know that such and such and such and such. Thank you for that information. And then we turn around and we take all of our funds and we show off in front of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Charlie allowed me to do this. We all know those people who do this. We love to throw our money down on the table. You know, there was a song like that, Dirty Lowdown. Take your money on the table and throw your money down on the table and drive it off the lot. Because we want to show everybody that we've been able to achieve all these things in the system of white supremacy, and it traps us under the system of white supremacy.
That's
right. That's how we roll. You know, the young men are taught that you're supposed to go out there and use your sexual prowess to get as many women to exploit that look like you as possible, and to use them and throw them off to the side. And that's what our men do. And that's how our men are measured, That's how they measure each other, and that's how women tend to measure men on how much they could waste and how much money they could take and give back to white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind me.
I could be wrong.
I could be wrong.
Right.
But that's one large reason. You know, I saw this growing up from the time I was a child. Yeah, I grew up in Harlem, surrounded by four people, myself four, everybody around me four. And what did everybody do as soon as they got their check? I started to see black people take their check and they would run it. They would run through that check until it was completely gone, and they would buy gold chains and clothing. And as I got older, I just saw people start buying cars with their money. As I got older, buying women with their money. The more money they get, the more money they throw away.
Mm-hmm.
We see that even with our movie stars and our singers, entertainers, actors. We see all of them do the same thing with their money across the spectrum.
Right.
We don't get nowhere. But I could be wrong.
Well, you know.
You can hardly hear you, Charles.
I said we don't have a desire to go anywhere. Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Yeah. And it seems that, I think it's evident that no matter how much we talk about these kinds of behaviors on these programs, we seem to not be able to talk people out of these behaviors.
No. The Christmas season, I think it was somewhere around $452 billion, and somewhere between 15 and 20% was African American. Spending that amount of money, that's higher than the gross national product of some countries. You know?
Right.
And that's how we roll. And then we complain that there's no... Well, the economy's bad, and why are we spending all of this money? Why in every poor neighborhood, right after Christmas Day, you see the trash piled up with all of this empty boxes? You know, when we could really get ourselves out of the situation we're in, but we can't help but do that. And then the next day, everybody's telling other black people, "Look what I got that you don't have."
Right. Now, I think. We posted, you posted, someone posted, I don't know who, in the African Money group about the difference between Caucasian income in America and black income. I think Caucasians make like so many tens of thousands per month, and blacks make, you know, like one, on average, I think like $2,000 a month. Do you recall that data?
I'm not sure about the amount that they make. I know they spend quite a bit more of their money, somewhere around 70% wasted. But the amount they make, I couldn't be sure on that number.
Yeah, I forgot it, but I remember it was like astronomical difference in average income of Caucasian, you know, from the black.
Oh, there's a large difference between the amount they make.
But
I'm aware of another study that was done not too long ago where they talk about the money, the savings and investments of black people, and black women were identified as having somewhere of having a net worth somewhere around $5.
Yeah, I remember that study too. Yeah, you posted that one. And see, I wanted to bring it up just to show that we have a mental problem.
Yeah.
You know, we feel the need to buy products that make us less black. That's denigration.
Mm-hmm.
We have to buy products made by Caucasians that reflect European physical and cultural values,
mm-hmm.
and likeness, you know, even just to look like them, and
mm-hmm.
so they have us no matter how much wealth we may be allowed to accumulate under this oppressive, tyrannical system. All of that wealth will be used to psychologically and actual physically advance and further strengthen white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And until we...
I believe that...
Go ahead.
I believe Fuller, I'm not sure if he mentioned it in this book, but he identified something called racial, how did he put it? I forget the word he said. That it wasn't racial showcasing is what he says. I'm not sure whether it's in this book or not. And he said racial showcasing is a way in which a lot of black people are put out into the media and presented to us as people who have a lot of money. We did a lot of posts and talked about that where some of these people, was this R. Kelly, a lot of these football players, you know, 70% of these football players are broke within the first 3 years of retiring from football. So these people that are out there who appear to have so much money, they're still black with still the same behavior, and they're losing this money faster. It's just like you said, it's their money is only going to support white supremacy.
Right.
And you see that with a lot of actors, a lot of, you know, these folks, we see them when they're making the money, but we don't realize that they're losing it a whole lot faster than they're making.
Right. And there's no social responsibility placed on the community at large to behave in a manner that is beneficial to the community. So when a person or group of Africans in captivity here in the Americas are permitted to make a large sums of money under white supremacy, I'm willing to even say those people are carefully selected to make that money.
Mm-hmm.
So they would not be socially responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And they are surrounded by advisors who encourage that derelict behavior so as to perpetuate the idea, you know, you should, you know, make this money, go out, you know, buy prostitutes and cocaine and, you know,
mm-hmm.
and blaze through that money until, you know, you can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, go back to living a regular, you know, life and say, ooh, I sure had a good time, you know, when I had this, you know, all this money. And then, and everybody totally understands.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. You know, and that's the pathetic part about our community at large is that, I would say, it's like as we age, we don't look back as a group. And I'm not talking about individuals. As a group, our culture does not look at what we did the past 30, 40 years and say, hey, we really dropped the ball. We screwed up. We're like, you know. They say, "Woo, that was awesome."
I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Right, and when people like us come along and say, "Hey, you know, we just waste so many billions of dollars. We could have done these things," you know, I'd about there like, "Ah, oh, shut up."
That's it. I think we all remember. I think all of us worked in some office at some point, and you heard me talk about this before, is that young white girl will be sitting there every lunchtime eating pretzels and celery, and celery and carrot sticks, and dipping it in the ranch. And every black person at office will run right out to go to lunch and sit down at a restaurant. And what happens is that girl that's sitting there eating the celery sticks, over time, she's buying a house, and,
right.
And all the black people look at her and go, you know, oh, those, you know, they have money, they're buying a house. No, she was eating pretzels, she was eating celery sticks, and you are going out to lunch at $15 a pop every day for the last 7 years.
You know what? And you're right. That girl saved, and her parents probably gave her $10,000-$15,000 on the house. So they also ate celery and
yeah.
I mean, not just because they save so well. I'm not just going to put them out there because they save, because they do make more money because the system is designed to benefit them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they make more money. They make sacrifices, you know, with respect to, you know, to them. You know, they probably could afford it. We can't, but the point is we aren't making the adjustments that we need to make.
And that's our issue is that we're not making a proper adjustment to get out of our situation. We're making arrangements to live under the system of white supremacy and to assimilate, and we're not making the adjustment to get around it. You know, replace it with something else. As Neely Fuller says, replace it with justice.
We're not using our
resources to replace it.
That's right. No, we're not. And the problem persists.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Neely Fuller goes on to the same page, 41, for all of you who have your text in front of you. The two basic methods of resisting racism. Number one, four-wallism. Number two, open-airism. His explanation follows. The four-wall method of fighting white supremacy is the general title given to the concept of having a special meeting place for those persons who seek to resist white supremacy. For the most part, this also includes the following. Regular meetings by two or more persons. The renting and or buying of meeting halls and buildings. Repeated fundraising. Centralized and or closed-in activities. Formal acquisition and storage of supplies to be distributed and or sold for support of organizational activities. Mandatory and regular payment of dues, payment of salaries, and or giving of awards to organizational personnel, regular accumulation of funds for legal fees, and etc. Designated leadership persons who regularly give orders or directives. Designated fellowship is persons who regularly follow the orders and or at directives of the persons who are designated as leaders. Promoting the practice of thinking, speaking, and or acting as if a particular number of people situated in a certain place at a certain time and calling themselves a particular name or title constitutes an organization. Promoting the practice of calling an area of land by a specific name or title or referring to it as a country, nation, state, etc. Promoting the practice of calling persons by a specific name and or title and then associating that name and or title with the name and or title associated with a particular area of land. Promoting the practice of associating a person with a thing by speaking and or acting if the person and the thing are one and the same, or and or that the person and the thing represent one another. His examples are buildings, flags, maps, pictures, statues, words, whatnot. The four-wall method is a standard and or traditional procedure used by the victims of white supremacy in their resistance to white supremacy. It is called the four-wall method because the non-white people who use the method plan, talk, and generally try to inspire one another by meeting each other regularly in a building that usually has four or more walls. The walls the walls may be of stone, wood, wire, and or other structure that is erected by people. the effectiveness of the meetings in the accomplishment of their purposes are oftentimes judged on the basis of the number of people that appear within the wall area at the same time. If the same people assemble often enough, they are usually asked or expected to assemble regularly. They may be awarded a name and or title and told that they are members of an organization of people. The structure, building, etc. in which the members meet is usually considered to be a headquarters and or central meeting place. The power of the people attending a meeting at this headquarters is oftentimes measured by the total number of people who appear regularly at that particular place. Those persons who appear regularly are usually expected to contribute money, socialize, and use names and or titles that are associated with that particular assembly of people at that particular place of assembly. In a world socio-material system dominated by white supremacists, racists, the four-wall method of resisting white supremacy has the following weaknesses. Oftentimes, many of the most effective people who attend counter-racist meetings do not intend to help eliminate racism, but are sent by and are financially assisted by white supremacists to work to defeat the purpose of the meeting. When money is collected, much of it is stolen and are used for the purpose other than this elimination of racism. Most of the time, too much time, energy, money, and etc. is spent trying to obtain and or maintain the four walls and the regular structure or place where the people assemble to talk about what they should or should not be doing to accomplish.
The NAACP.
So true. True is that. It's asinine, it really is. Power is too often judged on the basis of the number of people who attend a particular meeting and on the basis of how crowded the people a particular structure was at a particular time. I gotta stop right here. Y'all remember the time we had this African lady who was studying, who was I guess you were apprenticing a particular craft with, and she told you that your whatever some person was successful because of the number of people following it, and we laughed at it because it was hilarious.
It was a lady who was she was from Africa, and she was teaching me to sew the African garments, and she was living with us at the time. And she was convinced that all of these televangelists and these people who were, you know, supposedly, you know, so close to God and all this stuff, that what gave them their credentials or their validity was all of the people that followed them. So I asked her, you're always talking about, you know, what you understand and what you know about the Bible and how close you are to God, and no one follows you. You know. And she didn't really like that at all. She left. She left. I never finished that lesson. I can only make half of the African garment.
When you gonna finish that collar up?
Okay. Exactly. Anyway, we have like 15 seconds, so if you want to hear the rest of the show, you have to call in 323-580-5707. Otherwise, we're about to go off the air, and you can catch it in archive.
Yeah, that was. I just had to. I was full on that one, so I had to take a break. Thanks for stalling for me.
Okay.
He right there. All of this is so true. Because we had some people telling us, since we've been doing more social media networking, that we need to start this group and we need to have buildings and meetings. And I was like, all of that's trash. That's white and red, Nita Fuller. I come to that conclusion. But I'm glad that Nita Fuller came out with it 42 years ago. And too bad our people have not caught on, you know. And I figured it after just a few years of doing this. And obviously Nita did too. So that only goes to show that most of our people are stupid. So at upwards of 95%. I mean, that's just reality. I'm not laughing at them. I mean, they just need to try to get, you know, get sharper.
Yeah.
Because we keep trying to say the same failed strategies. At least trying to strategize the same way. But anyway, here we go. The next one. Squabbling is usually increased by the number of people attending the meeting.
You get way too much joy out of this.
Man, because it's like he hitting every last one of them. He ain't missed one yet. And she right. It's usually because of the development of personality clashes. People cannot put the goal ahead of their own personality clashes. I don't understand that. I don't get it. You know, but whatever, man. Those who are lax in attending meetings and those who are considered to be members of the organization are generally treated as unimportant, uncooperative, and are as outsiders. That's true. Promoting the appearances of being substantially effective against white supremacy without being substantially effective against white supremacy. In other words, people just like to look like they're being effective without actually being effective. And that is, I mean, that's a powerful problem. We really, you know, are weak to people who basically show off.
Yeah.
If a person talk a lot of trash, you know, and not to say he's not telling the truth, it's just more talk, less action, that person is considered to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Brave. That's how you get it. That's how you get black people to follow you, is put a mic in your face, you know, and go off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without really discussing the problems, you know, analyzing our behavior, you know, in my opinion, I think that's what we really need to be focusing on, is learning how to change our behavior. Dr. Amos Wilson said, hey, if we can stop being what we are, then white supremacy will stop being what it is.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we got to find out what we are, because we obviously don't know who we are, don't understand our behavior, understand it, and then modify it.
We're kings and queens.
Right, we're kings and queens. Come on. I'm God now. You know, that's what the black people doing now. Now we gods and shit.
Oh yeah, they promoted from king to God.
And then now they moved to God, you know. Dodging warrants and shit. Like, it's crazy, man. That lets you know we are totally bananas.
Uh-huh.
Y'all are so cynical.
Yes, we are.
It's trash day, Your Highness.
Clean up on aisle 7, Your Majesty.
We got no idea. That, okay, you may aspire to be a king and queen. You got to figure out how you're going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
That requires planning. You know, and effective planning, rather. You know,
yeah.
We got to work at it. That's work. You got to put into it. We don't want to do that kind of work. So the last section we'll cover he talks about the open air method of resisting white supremacy. So we just did the four wall method. He explained why it doesn't work, and he's going to talk about the open air method. And he said it is a practical, the functional opposite of the four wall method. The open air method is generally characterized by the following: informal communication and or association, no regular meetings, no renting or buying of meeting halls and or buildings. I guess that means there will be no building fund, huh, for me to steal.
that's
probably the reason why our movement ain't as quote unquote successful.
Well, just damn.
We don't have no money for many of you to come out and steal.
Oh, man. You just ruined everything.
There's no cash incentives, no fancy titles to go around so you can convince them to have sex with you.
No cash incentives, no buyback program, nothing.
Nope. What the hell? They just throw everything. I don't even want to come to this month. There's no place to come. There's no place to meet. Here we go. No repeated fundraising activities. No formal acquisition of storage of supplies to be distributed and also for support of organization. That means
this
merchandise.
Makes it sound preposterous.
Come on, man. I like that. You know, like, it's these people, some of them, they have, like, African network and radio shows where they, like, sell free materials. they have names, like, that may reflect some ancient, you know, Egyptian king or medicine person or something. And they get suckers to buy things that they can download for free. Bootleg your BTR show and sell it to their devotees. Because they're stupid. Oh wow. Okay. No payment of salaries or given rewards. Authorization. That's right. I've always said you can always keep all the creeps and malevolent people away, because if you don't have no money, they ain't gonna show up.
He's getting a special kind of joy out of this. I mean, I don't even understand.
this is what we've been talking about for years.
I know, but
I find it reading. I'm like, I this is my first time looking at it. Really, I read it on Air France for y'all, so y'all getting the reaction raw. And I've been saying this for at least 5 years. This is the way, and he already pointed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And black people, I hadn't been doing this long. Hell, I'm only 40, and I'm just saying that our people at large can't figure out that all these organizations that's been around, can't have come and gone and whatnot, and they sprout back up again. You know, they may name themselves after Wildcats and whatnot, and they still running the same scam on us decade after decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just don't get it, man. Says no regular accumulation of funds with legal fees, etc. No designated leadership. Every person speaks and or acts as his own leader according to individual selections from a code of thought, speech, and action. No designated followership. Every person speaks and or acts as his own follower according to individual selections from a code of thought, speech, and action. No thought, speech, and action that is dictated by one person and or by a specialized designated group of persons. In a world social material system dominated by white supremacists, the open air method of resisting white supremacy has the following basic weaknesses. It is initially difficult to communicate the idea of the counter-racist code to all the victims of racism in a manner that effectively motivates all and or most of them to think, speak, and act according to the suggestions of that code. That's the only weakness he could find, and he's right. But I have a method around that. His summation of the section on the open air method and the four wall method. The four basic differences between the four wall method of existing racism and the open air method is as follows. The four wall method generally is characterized by two or more persons attending regular meetings at the same time, in the same place, according to a mutual agreement they have made with one another. The open air method generally is characterized by one or more persons thinking, saying, and doing specific things at all times in different places according to individual agreement with a specific code of thought, speech, and or action. Yeah, note, the United Independent Compensatory Code System concept is an open air method of resisting racism. And I would like to add that weakness of the that he mentioned, the open air method, how difficult it is to communicate ideas, is that you don't need it is not possible to do it in that way. But if you have a group, people doing like we're doing now, discussing the issues, analyzing the problems, creating solutions through various methods, through every means possible to us. And then you structure everything built around, I would say, the household, husband, wife, children, and let that mother and father raise those children. And that's the four wall method. That's the four wall method of that program, because those particular families structures, they will be meeting. Those are the people that meet regularly. Those are the ones who generate orders, and then the household carries them out. And then the open air method is that we all are independently and acting in a way counter to racism, white supremacy, and yet united in our thought patterns. So that's why it is, as the title of the book states clearly, United Independent. Compensatory, meaning we're compensating for what we lack with this code system concept, so we can overcome racism and white supremacy. Anybody else has any comments on this summary?
Oh yeah, I would agree with that. I like the open air method, but there has to be a combination of the two. But the same way you said, it's within your own family is the you would have a closed system.
All right. Well, I hear the music. I guess our time is winding down. Thanks, Brother Amin, and thanks to all of you out in the listening audience, and my sweet wife, y'all living the wheels of steel. Thanks for bringing it on. And we'll catch you all next week here again, same time. And we'll begin with the basic objectives of correct law enforcement by Neely Fuller Jr. in his book, United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. Y'all have a good night and have a good week, all right? Peace.
Peace.